some things that, you know, everything from the story of the beaver to the man in the cellar or the whatever that was or that sort of thing. And can you think of, well, the little anecdotes that you would, aside from our spiritual growth, just what does it take, you know, what does it take to be the vicar of a small country? And I think this is going to be a great insight. Anybody who comes to see, well, you might have to deal with the mice, or you might have to deal with the, whatever, you know. So I think that if you had some little anecdotes to tell us, that that would be fun to know.
Okay. Well, let me see. I really think that in seminary they should have taught me things like how to fix toilets and how to fix furnaces and how to fix lawn tractors. You know, masonry, all kinds of things that I could have learned. there are one thing was there are a couple little things. One was we had a faulty toilet in the powder room, and I knew it was going to collapse at some point. The flushing mechanism didn't quite work right. And you had to, you know, wiggle the handle and that kind of thing. Well, I figured that, you know, let's keep it going and wait a while and see what'll happen. Well, wouldn't you know it broke after the Good Friday morning service. So there I was, Good Friday afternoon at the hardware store, buying a piece of hardware for the toilet tank to fix the toilet in the powder room. I thought it was a good Friday work. So there I was trying to get this little thing to work, and eventually I got it to work. And then there was the day that there was something smelly in the chapel.
Oh.
And everybody thought it was just a mouse, because we get mice in there all the time. Well, it wouldn't go away. And it just wouldn't go away, and people started to complain. Since I'm the one that's in there probably the most of anybody, it really got bad. So one day I opened up the trap door down to the basement, and there in a concrete cistern was a big fat dead gray squirrel.
Oh.
And I got that out of there.
Oh.
But that was another adventure at St. Philip's. Another adventure was the time that the oil tank leaked. We had an old oil tank in the basement, and it started to smell like oil. And we called the oil company, and they came, and they said, guess what? You're going to have to pull it out, drain it, pull it out, shovel out the leaking parts and all that. And you're going to have to take apart the stairs so that we can get the new tank in and the old tank out. Well, Malcolm and I literally took apart the basement and the stairs so that you could remove this horrible, smelly, rusty, old oil tank and install this new one, which they did. And then we had to rebuild the stairs down into the basement. Well, that was an interesting little task. We got that done.
Did the tank have to come out down the front door? Or
yeah, down the front door.
You had to get that tank out.
Yeah, well, the oil people, Malcolm and I, did it together. Ugh. all four of us. There were four of us. They supplied two men, and we supplied two. And we got that out finally. But that was a heck of a job.
I would say so.
Yeah.
Do you remember what year that was? I'm just thinking about it. I wonder what the life of that tank is, the new tank.
Oh, the new tank will probably last 20, 25 years at least, probably. Maybe more. Mm-hmm. They make them much better now than they used to.
They do.
Yeah. Right. There were two animal stories at the Chapel House. One was, I guess I wrote about that in the newsletter, when I was doing pre-wedding counseling in the back room on a spring day, and all of a sudden I turned around and there was a possum sitting by the door inside.
Inside?
Inside. Had crawled in through the holes in the wall in the laundry room and just walked right into the meeting room where I was talking to the bride and the groom. and so with a broom, we managed to sweep him back out to the laundry room and close the door, and I guess he eventually left. He went back outside. But
they're not too bright, you know.
That's the possum story.
Not
yeah.
Bright.
Yeah. And that was kind of fun. The other one was when the building was not occupied. There were strange animal tracks in the living room. And after thinking about it a while, we figured it was raccoon tracks. And the raccoon had come down the chimney and was making a little nest in one of the rooms in the house. Well, I crawled up on the roof and put a wire mesh net over the chimney to keep the raccoon out. And I wasn't sure the raccoon was out of the house when I did it, but fortunately, that was the case. We didn't actually trap him in the house, but we trapped him out of the house.
That was good.
Yeah.
Richard, oral history. Yeah. I'm not supposed to change stories, but I have to quickly tell you about Sally Denby's story.
Mm-hmm.
That wonderful farm, old Sycamore.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
They had
house
guests in the springtime, and Sally was in the kitchen getting breakfast, and the house guest came in and said, "Have you always had a snake in the dining room?" The snake had come and wound its way, because it came into the cellar of the old house, and up a pipe that was attached to the radiator, came through the floor, because it was nice and warm, and there was the snake. So that was always her signature. We always had a snake in the dining room.
Yeah.
That is wonderful. Wonderful stories. Well, that's what happens when you live out in the country.
That's right.
That's true.
Oh, sure.
That's true. And you hope so. Speaking about the congregation, we've had some, and we've lost some wonderful characters.
Yep.
Like Lloyd and Peggy Lawrence.
Right.
And I wanted to find out about the how the chapel came to be. And I know that you know that story very well. And how Bertha Cole that bought the chapel? Or how did that chapel get away from the school? It was in the Holmesquest School. I wonder how that happened.
Well, it was a school, one-room school building.
It was that?
Yeah, it
and
was.
And then was it part of the Holmesquest, or was it just?
No, it was just used by them.
Owned by them.
No. I don't believe so. I think it was purchased from the
school district.
The school district.
Right.
No one knows exactly, I understand, when it was built, but they estimate around 1815, 1820. Most buildings at that time, the people that built them would carve into the supporting beam of the roof the date, but no one has been able to find the actual date of the building. It's made by Italian masons, the walls. Is it Italian style of window shaping with the rounded interior, that's right, to let in more light. And there was a well in front and an outhouse in the back. There is still to this day in the front wall projecting about 20 inches off the ground inside a rock that comes out of the wall that is a basin. It's a shallow basin carved into the rock. It's in the sacristy of the church. It was the sink where the children would rinse their hands. They'd pump water out of the well, and they'd rinse their hands there. The original chimney is still on the building, although it's been plastered over. And I understand that behind the altar, if you cut away, you might even find the original chalkboards that were there.
Oh, really?
Up on the teacher's platform, which is the chancel of the church. Mm-hmm. That was for sure, but that's what I've heard. And I also understand that, I guess, around the late 1800s, they built the new school. It's up in Solbury. And then the community used it for committee meetings, township committee and all those other things. In 1920, the Episcopal Diocese wanted to expand into the mission field of Bucks County. So they started, I think, about five churches, or reinvigorated about five, in the, what was called the Center County Missions. And one was St. Philip's, which they started. Trinity, I think, had been in existence. But they bought the schoolhouse for $2,000, I think. And its first service was, I think, in the spring of 1921. I think in 21. It's been... Another church they started was Holy Nativity in Wrightstown, which failed. And I think another one was St. James Langhorn. That has done very well. So is, of course, Trinity Solbury. Wrightstown didn't make it, but then it was reincarnated in 1976 when the diocese bought a house in near Wrightstown to use as a church, to start a new church. And then 10 plus years later, they built the present structure at Durham Road and 2nd Street Pike.
Martha Cole, was she one of our original people?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
Is it true that the pews came from the tennis courts?
That's one of the stories I've heard, yeah.
At the Holmes Quest School? Is that where
at Solbury School?
At Solbury
School.
Those are our pews.
Yeah, that's what I hear. I mean, that's the story, was that they were the outdoor tennis court pews, because one of the reasons is that they are made out of slats, so that if it rains, the water doesn't collect.
Right.
And then apparently the Coles paid for and had made the velvet cushions.
Mm-hmm.
That are on the pews.
And the bell.
There was a bell there, and then Marshall and Bertha wanted to make a bigger bell, a church bell. Mm-hmm. There was a small bell But then they had made... Uh-oh.
Let me see. How are we doing? We're doing okay.
Yeah.
We're doing okay. But I want to tell a story about the bell, so I want to...
Okay.
Yes.
Are we going? We're activated.
Yeah, and if I hear it...
Okay. Okay.
And I'll go the other way. So the bell...
Yeah.
Is there a bell that is classically known as a church bell? And...
Well, some of this is written down, the date of the installation of the bell. I looked for, but I didn't find the pamphlet when I left the house, because I've given most of my files to Tim Philpott, and it's in his material. Mm-hmm. But there is a date on that bell, and it's inscribed for all the saints. They gave it in memory of the saints, and it was made, I think, in Germany, the bell.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe they had to make a larger cupola for the bell, and it was installed. The original old bell, they put down the basement, and we didn't know what to do with it when we were cleaning out the basement. We were going to sell it, frankly, at one of our spring fairs.
If I had known that when I saw that bell, I would have bought it.
But nobody bought it. And then I didn't know what to do with it. I thought it was kind of fun to have another bell. So right. I built this little tripod that it's on now.
Right.
And Chris Cosner helped me with that, being a carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
And we hung the bell in that little tripod out in the garden. Anyway, that's
there it is.
That's where it is. Yeah, okay. It's still there. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
It needed work because it had to be. I had to take it over to Gesundheit. I had to take it over to Finkel's because it had to be welded. To get the, it wasn't quite completely disassembled from the yoke. But anyway, we got it done.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. That's it. Well, it's relatively new.
Yeah, Memorial Garden was built by Ken Kologi after the beaver situation. One of the reasons that he was interested in doing that was to create a section of the land which was used, because the beaver water from the pond downstream rose to the level that it would encroach onto the parking lot. And his thinking was, if we had a garden there, it would be sort of an early warning sign to the general public and everybody that it should happen again, that we would have cause to become concerned with the rising water level. Whereas before, it was just weeds.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
But we could see it in the garden. That was the point.
Right.
Because the garden slopes down.
Right, yeah. But, you know, it hasn't since 96 or 95 come back.
No, and the beaver was here in the 80s? And I don't remember the year.
I think it maybe was 80. Oh, golly, when was it? I think it was later than that. I can't remember. I'd have to look it up. But there. Yeah, right.
And in this book, it's going to have the names of
there is a
ashes that have been scattered.
Yeah, it's going to have all the memorials in the church listed. One of the memorials is the case for the Book of Remembrance itself, which was given, I believe, in memory of Lloyd Lawrence.
Oh.
And there are items in the church that are memorials, like the chair up in the chancel in memory of Yvonne Kennedy, who died in 84. She was born in 1897. Mm. And then other things as recent as the Chasuble that is given in memory of John Kirk, which we just got a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of things that the book has not been kept up to date, and before I retire, she said that she would want me to let her know as much as I could about the different memorials.
That's important.
And
so important, yeah.
Yeah, they're going to all be in this
book. The
Special
Cross also was for Lloyd Lawrence.
Yeah, that's right.
And Peg Lawrence did mm-hmm. the
outdoor watering spigot for the garden.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he also decorated mm-hmm. the powder room.
Right, that's
and,
right.
And we have to, because mm-hmm. mm-hmm. Bob King says every time I go mm-hmm. to the bathroom, I think of mm-hmm. Peg Lawrence.
Mm-hmm. That's right, it's beautiful.
Yes, just lovely.
Yeah.
Absolutely lovely. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Now, is there more? Are there other things in this? We've looked at your personal history, mm-hmm. the history of the church, and we've looked at your the growth of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And is there what other things would you like to have for us? And just the work of being the vicar of the small country.
Well.
Church.
Have I told you the story about Larry Meck?
No.
And the Coles?
No.
I haven't told you that. Okay.
No.
Well, I think I'll tell it, although I have a bit of uncertainty about it. The reason is that well, it's a funny story, really. My wife refers to it in the letter that's going to be in the newsletter. But I don't know how many people at St. Philip's know about it because I haven't really shared it with a lot of people. But it's might as well. Bertha and Marshall had this man whom they entrusted with the management of many of their concerns at their estate. He was the estate manager, I guess was his official title.
Was that a grounds manager or
yeah,
was that financial manager?
Well, it started out as he was, Larry's father was in the employ of the Coles for years, and then Larry kind of grew up with the Coles. And Larry became their right-hand man, basically. And he essentially did almost everything for them. He would cook, he would mow the fields, he'd repair the cars, he would, he was a good man to have around because he was quite talented in a lot of ways. He was married to Judith. They had David and Nuts. They adopted a child. Anyway, they had a couple kids. They lived on the estate downstairs. And I guess Edith helped too when she wasn't taking care of the kids, but Larry was the main man. Larry also supervised the houses they had up on McMahon Island up in Maine and helped with the running of the boats. They had a boat up there. And as he got older and proved himself, I suppose, wise in other areas, he also handled some of the, I guess, ordering and you know, finances and things, although he didn't, of course, write the checks, but he kind of advised and helped out, and he certainly helped out when Bertha and Marshall moved to the Quadrangle in Haverford and other places. He continued to help for years. All his life, it was his life, his career, basically. A very nice man. He was also, he's of course still alive. He's a pastor at a church, a community church, and he's, a lay preacher at this church there. I think he may even be licensed or ordained to do certain things in the church. He lives in Southampton, and there's a congregational Baptist-type church there that he's involved with and does good work with.
Oh.
Well, Bertha and Marshall became friends with me and my wife, Tam, and we became aware that they were concerned about Larry because he had been charged with flashing somebody on the towpath on the canal. Do you remember that? You do remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I didn't know who that was or who that was, but there, we knew that there was a man along.
Yeah.
Right around the Stockton area.
Yeah,
yes,
right.
Wow.
Well, there was a woman apparently who lived at Phillips Mill area who had accused him of doing this, of exposing himself when she was out taking a walk. And everybody thought how really bizarre this was, because of all the people that would you could conceivably think of that would do something like that, it wouldn't be Larry. I mean, Larry was downright upright, and I don't think he had a quirk here and there, but I know he was a genuine God-fearing Christian man, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
No one knew. Marshall didn't know why this woman had accused Larry. The thought was that maybe she didn't like the Coles. This was a way to get at the Coles. Or that she didn't, something else was going on, or what it was. Well, anyway, poor Larry, he was distraught. He said, oh, this is terrible, what am I gonna do? And so were the Coles, Bertha and Marshall. So apparently they got a lawyer. I guess somebody from the congregation was a lawyer from their congregation, not ours. From Larry's congregation. And there was going to be a hearing, a preliminary hearing at Clyde Lever's district justice office. You have heard this.
No, I haven't.
You haven't?
But I know Clyde Lever. No, go
okay.
Ahead.
Well, good old Clyde Lever, he was a district justice, I guess, who got the case, and he had to hear the original charges and had a hearing as to whether they would continue with the charges. Okay, well, the Coles wanted moral support for themselves and for Larry at the time, so they said, look, We'll get a few of Larry's church people to come and represent him at this hearing, stand with him. And, oh, by the way, why don't you, Kyle, you can come too, because you're sort of our chaplain, and you're the minister at St. Philip's, and it would be nice to have you there. You know Larry. You and Larry are friends. And I said, oh, yeah, I'd be honored to. I'd be delighted to do that. I think I should be there, I said, important for me to be there. Okay, well, I don't know whether you know, but I usually wear my clerical collar. I don't always wear it. And sometimes I wear my gray shirt, sometimes I wear a black shirt with a round collar. But this particular day, I remembered fairly well. It was in the morning, the hearing. I had my black shirt on and my white clerical collar, and I had on a nice wool jacket that my father had bought for me at an after Christmas sale in Haverford, and I was looking pretty preppy and clergy-like. And And there I was, sitting in the gallery at the hearing. Good old Clyde Lever was wheeled himself out, and he was conducting the hearing. And you know how these things go. You have the plaintiff on one side and her lawyer, and you have the defendant over here, and the lawyer says, "Now, Miss, what happened?" And she describes what happened, and then the lawyer says, "Now, Miss, can you identify in this courtroom the person?" And she said, "Yes." And then she reached out her hand and pointed at me. I couldn't believe it. It was the funniest thing.
I wish I had a camera too.
It was hysterical. I couldn't believe it. Of course, I probably turned pale and started to shake, and I didn't know what the heck was coming off. Well, apparently what happened is the Clyde Lever and the lawyers just said, "Well, there's no case here. We'll just throw it out." Mm-hmm. Case of mistaken identity, because this guy certainly isn't the one. And, and that was the end of it. And then good old Marshall got up, and he said at the end, when everybody was sort of gathering around, he said, "You know, this isn't going to go against our good friend Kyle St. Clair, is it?" And they said, "Of course not. It's all right. Don't worry. He's fine. He's fine. Just, you know, go about your business. Everything's all right." So anyway, Larry was cleared. And then that night we had a little dinner party to celebrate over at the Coles.
Yes.
And had a nice dinner. But the theory was that this woman who brought the charges knew that Larry was a clergy person. And the reason that she pointed at me was I had my collar on.
Oh.
And she wasn't, I guess mentally she's not completely all there, and was confused either, and she just pointed to the person she thought was the clergy person, because she knew Larry was clergy.
Was the clergy person.
Yeah.
And she just probably did this just, we don't know what, you know, what.
We don't know why.
Against the church, like some of these, you know.
Well, it could have been, yeah.
Yes, and yeah. Mm-hmm. Probably, mm-hmm. Yes. And I'll bring them down, you know.
Yeah, right.
Yes, that.
She could have been angry at God or something like that. It could have been all kinds of things, you know.
Right.
Who knows?
Yeah.
The state of mind of,
that is funny.
This person.
That is funny.
But that's probably the most funny thing that has ever happened to me in 21 years.
Well,
I just couldn't believe it.
How many people could possibly, well, except the quick story of Father Terry when he was a monk.
Oh,
and did you hear the story when he was, remember they would eat in silence.
Yes.
Except someone had to read from something. 14th century literature. And he was reading this, because he's a wonderful voice. He was reading, and the audience then warmed their hands over hot braziers.
Oh, God.
And he said, first one little monk began to chuckle, and pretty soon they were out. And Father, whatever his name is, Canna, brasserie, you know, a
right.
Oh, so because the story is from that day to this, they don't ever refer to him as Kenneth Terry. They refer to him as the house old hot for tears.
That's right. Oh, great.
So there are those wonderful, stories
great
that travel with
clergy stories that just go around and around
that are just priceless, absolutely priceless. Yeah. Oh, that is a funny story. I did not hear anything of this because I attend church and have gotten to know so many of the just great people.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't. I'm going to interview Betty Shard.
Oh, good. Yeah.
And she is. Mm-hmm. She's been here for so long and has wonderful dog stories.
Oh, yeah.
To tell.
Sure.
And she is wonderful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And to her spirit, she's really a marvelous person.
Mm-hmm.
And she's had a tough road to hoe.
Absolutely.
You never hear her complain.
Mm-hmm. That's
never.
Right. That's right.
She always has something going on that is very special that I should see her do.
Mm-hmm.
She will call and say, "What are you doing?" Well, getting dinner. And she'll say, "Well, drop everything because you've just got to, get off to the museum to see the Redfield Clay." And she'll go on and then she'll call to see if you've done it.
Okay.
So she's just been a wonderful treasure. Just
good.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely love Betty Shard and Betty Blair. All the Bettys.
Yeah.
Our collection of Bettys. And Mary Martin has been just precious and has gone through some tough things.
Yeah.
And she too is, she looks unburdened now that the farm has been sold.
Right.
And she is at her house over at the, and now she's traveling. She just seems unburdened.
Yeah.
Where she was burdened before with a lot of things. And no wonder the poor dear. She'd have stomach pains. Anybody would have stomach pains. But she seems to be on the mend and doing well. So we've got some dear treasure there.
That's right. And one of whom, or two of whom, were Gertrude and Isaac Walwerk.
And I never got to know them. I really feel bad about that.
Yeah.
They were gone before.
Yeah, they were. Gertrude lived to be 100 and something, 2 or 1 or something.
How was she related to the Coles?
Well, she's not related. She, where the Coles live, or lived.
Yes.
Gertrude and Isaac lived in the house at the end of their driveway, which the Coles didn't own. Isaac bought it, I think. He bought it as a shell of a house when he first married Gertrude, I think. And he built it into a house. It was just a stone wall. And they lived there where that little wishing well thing is out front there.
A lawyer now owns it.
Yeah. And he did some of the ironwork in the church.
Oh, that's how I know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Gertrude was quite a character. She always drank coffee. Maybe that's why she lived to be 102. She was constantly drinking coffee, morning, noon, and night. And we would go over there. And she was, she would invite Tam and me over and our kids, and then it would be around Christmas, and then she'd run upstairs and she'd put on this reindeer costume and come down as Rudolph when our kids were in elementary school. And they were just amazed by it. It was unbelievable. Apparently she used to do that with children everywhere. She'd just dress up as Rudolph.
She'd always dress up as Rudolph.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
they were wonderful, wonderful couple. They really were. And Isaac died of some intestinal problem quite suddenly in Doylestown Hospital one day. I guess he was in his 80s, maybe.
How old was he?
I guess he may have been in his 80s or 70s, late 70s or 80s or something like that. And then Gertrude went to live at Folkways, and that's where she was when she died. She has a daughter, Gwen, married John Grimm. Gwen was a librarian. She's now retired. But I used to visit Gertrude for years. She's also a good friend of Larry Meck's, by the way.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yes. Isn't that well? I think that in your retirement, when Tam has said, life as we know it is about to change.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
It's going to change.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
However, I mean, the parish is holding its breath, waiting to see where you end up as a parishioner.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll go. I mean, I've got plenty of choices. Gosh, there are lots of Episcopal churches
there
around.
Are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to, we're going to miss you, of course, but I liked your last letter very much when you said this is not the time to jump ship. And,
right.
Yes,
yeah,
you laid it right on the line.
There was
no pussyfooting around there.
That's right.
You said, now, wait a minute, folks. This
important
is not
to
the
be
time.
Clear.
That's
yeah.
right. And we're very clear. and I think that's exactly what needed to be said.
Mm-hmm.
And Jane King reminding everyone that we are all mm-hmm. a member of the vestry. I think that's
mm-hmm.
so very,
yeah, I
very
do too.
Important.
Yeah.
And Tim Philpott, of course, the mm-hmm. Bishop has said that it's very important to keep everybody informed,
mm-hmm.
but then no one
mm-hmm.
has told them how to go about doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we're going to almost have a monthly newsletter.
Oh, that's fine.
I think that's the best thing to do.
Yeah, I gave him a set of envelopes with addresses on them already.
Good.
And printed out another series of addresses, and then the rest is up to him.
Wonderful.
But there's no reason why he couldn't send it out every month.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I agree. I think it's very important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to
struggle on. Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, okay.
Good. Well, I think that... If there was anything else you wanted to
No, that's about it. Gosh,
say.
It's probably been 90 minutes. My goodness. Yeah. Okay.